Again, you're listening to the news at one. An historic deal was struck at the UN's COP27 climate summit in Egypt that will see rich nations pay poorer countries for the damage and economic losses caused by climate change. But there's been some stinging criticism too of the slow progress on cutting emissions. So what will be the legacy of this COP summit? Well, we can talk now to the chair of the Irish Climate Change Advisory Council, Mary Donnelly. A very good afternoon to you, Mary Donnelly, and welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much indeed,
Brian. You were there in Sharm el Sheikh. You had an opportunity to see the negotiations and the horse trading close up. What do you think at the end of it all has been achieved?
Well, I think it's fair to say that COP27 will go down as a historic moment for climate justice, but a missed opportunity for climate action. Coming on the heels of Glasgow last year, it's arguably half a step forward and half a step back. Half a step forward, of course, is, as you quite rightly say, the loss and damage fund, which at least now is part of the rhetoric within the dialogue of COP. It will take a number of years before it's fully developed and fleshed out, but that's a very positive step forward. On the other hand, the commitment by the world's major emitters to phase down fossil fuels really did not come through in the final statement. Equally in the energy space, this suggestion of low emission fuels, implying that perhaps gas would be an accepted transition fuel, are pointers to perhaps a lack of ambition, particularly by the major emitters, and the fact that they were availing of this opportunity to weaken the text in that respect. So I think, as I say, a little bit positive, a little bit negative.
And the previous COP commitment to ensure that emissions would peak in 2025, that's just gone now, isn't it? Out the window.
That's just gone. And with it is any commitment to, for example, cease investing in the exploration of new fossil fuel, oil and gas, for example. We have enough to keep us going. We don't need any more. Ultimately, there's every risk that this will be a stranded investment, a bit like the Nord Stream 2 investment. And yet there's no commitment to, in the financial side, to cease that investment going forward.
So where does that then leave the ambition in relation to limiting global warming to 1.5?
It's an extremely challenging ambition. It is the right one. It is, we identified that on the basis of science. It wasn't a political suggestion. Mm. It was actually came out of a scientific analysis. So we know it's the right number. We know it's the right target. But unfortunately, out of COP27, we know it's very, very difficult to achieve that. And we may have to start thinking very seriously about, reinforcing our efforts in the area of resilience and adaptation, because there will be consequences from the climate change that we actually see around us every day.
And I suppose that brings us back to the deal that was achieved in relation to loss and damage. And as you've said, it's a very significant departure, if you like, in terms of relations between the developed world and the developing world. But there's a lot of details still to be worked out in relation to how much those funds might be, how countries would qualify, how they'd be dispersed. A lot of unanswered questions.
And a lot of very high-level politics, I would say, as well, because the dividing line between those who should benefit and those who should pay is not as clear as just developing or underdeveloped countries, because we do have very large greenhouse gas emitters who perhaps would find themselves on one side of the line historically, but need to be in the section that would be paying for this. And I can mention some of the very large emitters that we know, China, for example, Saudi Arabia and other countries like that. These are the people who are the countries that are emitting the greenhouse gas emissions. And ultimately, if you follow the philosophy of the polluter pays, these are the ones who should also be contributing, as well, of course, developed nations.
To bring things closer to home, Minister Eamon Ryan was telling Maureen Ireland now about his expectation that in coming weeks, I think he said, that there would be an updated climate action plan. What are you hoping or expecting to see from that?
Well, firstly, we are looking forward to it coming out before the end of this year, because it's really quite urgent now that we have a clear roadmap to deliver the sectoral targets that were agreed this summer. Unfortunately, our emissions are not reducing, and we will need very clear, rapid action with a high impact. And that's really what we're looking for, is very targeted, rapid action that will deliver results in the very short term. in all sectors, of course, but if I take one or two examples, in transport, we've already said reallocation of road space to people so that they have a choice to, you know, walk, cycle, take public transport, but also to use some of the road space for leisure, have a cup of coffee, have lunch, whatever it might be. The car shouldn't really be dominating the space in our city. So this is one area we really would like to see progress. If I take, for example, electricity, we are in a crisis on electricity. People are paying very high bills at the moment. We absolutely have to remove our dependence on imported fossil fuels for our electricity system. And we're fortunate that we have enough natural resources in the country that we can substitute that. But we need to harness them. So that's, you know, onshore wind, solar, and down the line, also offshore wind. So we really would look for progress in these areas.
Okay. Mary Donnelly, Chair of the Climate Change Advisory Council, thank you very much for that.